Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. We are now exactly 24 hours from the deadline set by Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley for Dr. Christine Ford to agree to testify in public or in private about her attempted rape allegation against Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. If there is no agreement by 10 a.m. tomorrow, Senator Grassley threatens in his ultimatum, the hearing he has scheduled for Monday will be canceled and they'll proceed to a vote sometime next week on the nomination. Dr. Ford, as you've no doubt heard, wants an FBI investigation to take place first, as happened in the case of Anita Hill's sexual harassment accusation in the Clarence Thomas nomination and in other Supreme Court nominations. Dr. Ford wants an FBI investigation to take place first. So let's give the first word today to Anita Hill. With her experience testifying before a pretty hostile all-white male Senate Judiciary Committee in 1991, after she reluctantly came forward publicly, Dr. Hill wrote an op-ed in the New York Times this week called How to Get Things Right. A central point of Dr. Hill's article is that the FBI or some group with the right expertise, which senators don't have, expertise in sexual harassment, sexual assault, sexual misconduct, look into the charge. Here is Dr. Hill elaborating on ABC's Good Morning America.
Anyone who has been involved in anything similar to this, whether it's sexual harassment or sexual assault, as being charged here, knows that these take time to evolve. So 6 days is not enough for the senators who probably know very little about these kinds of claims. It's not enough for them to inform themselves. And so that's why it's important to have an investigation. It's important for them then to call on experts to help them shape credible questions to ask both Dr. Blasey and Judge Kavanaugh, and then to move forward.
Dr. Anita Hill on Good Morning America. And here's the kind of thing she's trying to avoid for this time around. Questions at a public hearing, not based on the evidence, but based on discrediting women who speak up in difficult situations, like this exchange in Hill's hearing with Republican Senator Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania.
What is your view of the fairness of asking Judge Thomas to reply 8, 9, 10 years after the fact?
I don't believe it's unfair. I think that that's something that you have to take into account in evaluating his comments.
Senator Specter and Dr. Hill, presumably that kind of thing wouldn't be getting it right this time, according to Dr. Hill. Neither would this exchange with Republican Senator Howell Heflin of Alabama.
In trying to determine whether you are telling falsehoods or not, I've got to determine what your motivation might be. Are you a scorned woman? Are you a zealot civil rights believer that progress will be turned back if Clarence Thomas goes on the court?
No, I don't. I think that I have my opinion, but I don't think that progress will be turned back. I think that civil rights will prevail, no matter what happens with the court.
Do you have a militant attitude relative to the area of civil rights?
No, I don't have a militant attitude.
So, Senator Howell Heflin asking Anita Hill if she's a militant or a civil rights zealot. in 1991, or A Woman Scorned. With me now is New York Times correspondent Kate Zernike. Her article this week is called On Kavanaugh, A Changed America Debates an Explosive Charge. Kate, thanks so much for coming on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
In your article, you quote political scientist Corinne McGonaghy from George Washington University and UNC, who plays excerpts from the Anita Hill testimony for her students and says they're often shocked by what they see and hear. Did she describe for you what shocks them?
Well, so there are two interesting things here. One is, as we know, and I think some people who are younger, so, you know, again, it was 1992. She was, I'm trying to think, I think she was 16 at the time herself, and so her students probably weren't even born. So what shocks people is, one, that it's an all-male judiciary panel, right? So that's the first thing, all white guys. But what's also striking is when they see Joe Biden. Because remember, it was the questioning and the harsh questioning was not just Republicans. It was Democrats casting doubt on her, as on Anita Hill as well. So I think that is surprising. You know, Joe Biden is sort of this revered figure. He's now, you know, talking about the importance of speaking out about campus sexual assault. That's one of his big causes. And students, she said, are shocked to see this.
We just heard the Arlen Specter exchange with Dr. Hill questioning why it took her years to go public. You write in your Times article that at the very least, politicians understand that most women would have a hard time coming forward. If they really do understand that, how do you think it's informing the debate at this moment?
Well, I do think we have seen, and one of the most striking things to me is the president's reaction. I mean, I don't know if somebody's just, you know, holding his fingertips back from Twitter, but he, even the president has said this, you know, he said he thinks the allegations against Judge Kavanaugh are unfair, but he thinks that this woman needs to be heard. And I think, you know, those clips he played are so striking. It's just, you know, why would she come forward? And, you know, do we even have to waste our time with this? So I think there, you didn't hear this. Well, we don't have, you know, you have people wanting to rush it through. As you said, there's a deadline tomorrow. But I think there is an understanding that her story needs to be heard. Where that gets kind of messy is when she delayed and said, well, I don't know, I want the FBI first. I think that's where people start to feel like, oh, no, just, you know, just come. No matter what they think of her allegations, they're like, well, why, you know, why is she delaying? I think that's where it gets hung up a little bit.
And listeners, our phones are open for this, for whatever you're thinking about the Judge Kavanaugh, Dr. Blasey situation right now, or what would you like to ask Kate Zernike from the New York Times, who's covering the story and the Changed America compared to the Anita Hill Clarence Thomas hearing days of 1991 or the time of Kavanaugh's alleged attempted rape in 1982. Our phones are open at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. So Professor McGonaghy said to you, if there is a public hearing, she doesn't expect this to be a replay of Anita Hill. The primary thing then, she says, was, is this going to undo Clarence Thomas? Undoing Kavanaugh or not is a story, she said, but the primary thing is the script each side is going to offer. Can you elaborate on what you think she meant by the script from each side being the primary thing?
Another difference with 1991, when the Anita Hill hearings happened, I don't think any senator on that panel saw what was coming the next year. When you had a presidential election, it was the year Bill Clinton was elected, and you had congressional elections, and there were suddenly, it was, you know, remember famously the year of the woman, and there were many, many women, a record number of women running for office and coming out to vote, and finally coming out and saying, you know, Congress is all white. This is part of our problem. They looked at that all-male judiciary panel and said, this is a problem. I think every senator on that panel, every senator, period, is very well aware of how this is being seen back home, how, you know, what this looks like to the public. So that includes Republicans and Democrats. You've got Claire McCaskill, who's a Democrat from Missouri, came out yesterday and said she would vote against Kavanaugh. But you have other red state Democratic senators in red states who have to be very careful about their vote and not looking like they're being, as the president said, unfair to Kavanaugh. On the other hand, you have people like Susan Collins, a Republican from Maine, who has to be very clear to, and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, to show that they're taking these concerns seriously, that they're taking Dr. Blasey seriously. So I think that's the difference, is that everyone understands this is all being done against the backdrop of the midterms. I don't think in 1991 people understood, oh, there's an election year next year, and how we treat this woman might come back to haunt us at the polls, or bite us at the polls, as it turned out to be.
On the standoff over an FBI investigation, the Anita Hill clip that we played and her op-ed in the Times this week make a central point that in order to have informed questions in this case, senators need to hear some findings first of some kind of neutral investigative body, but not just neutral, a body with experience in sexual misconduct cases. Any thoughts on how investigators experienced in sexual misconduct might conduct their fact-finding, differently than people without that experience?
Well, I'm not a professional in this, so I can't speak to that. But what I would imagine and what I would think would fit in the situation is someone who understands the extreme reluctance to come forward. I think this reluctance was even more true 36 years ago when this attack was alleged to have happened. But I think it's still difficult for women to come forward. You know, there were women who, when I wrote the story on Monday or Tuesday, there were women who were on Twitter saying, you know, I was abused and this has really haunted me, and I, like Dr. Blasey, didn't sort out my feelings until years later in therapy or marriage counseling, whatever it was. And so they're willing to say it on Twitter, and then when I asked to follow up, people say, I've already had enough exposure, it's been a difficult day, I don't think I can do this more and be in the newspaper for this. So I think there is more willingness to talk about sexual assault, but I think it's still really hard for people, and I think an investigator who understands that and can think, okay, how do we corroborate this or attempt to corroborate this without putting it all on the victim? And I think something that remains from Anita Hill is there is still a sense of the burden of proof being on the accuser as opposed to the accused. So I think that's something that has not changed since Anita Hill, and I think that's something that an investigator needs to be careful of.
And that was another line, as you probably know, in the Anita Hill op-ed. It said, the burden of persuasion, that's the phrase she used, the burden of persuasion is on Brett Kavanaugh.
Right. So, and I also think, it's interesting. Every one of these situations, like every different situation with sexual harassment or sexual assault, I think, it's the details that matter. It's the particular circumstances. So, and that's one of the things people talked about in my article was, what happened, what particularly happened in that case, but also how does this stack up against his history since then? And I think for a lot of people, I was in Pennsylvania yesterday talking to voters about this, and something that someone said to me was, the guy was a Democrat in his 30s, and he said, I didn't like Neil Gorsuch, but I got that it was the president's choice. Elections have consequences. If the president wants this guy, that's fine. I didn't have a bad feeling about Neil Gorsuch, even though I didn't agree with his legal positions. But with Brett Kavanaugh, this voter said to me, there seem to be too many partial answers. He seemed, this person felt that Kavanaugh had been a little bit evasive or sort of too cute by half in his responses before the committee initially.
And with Kate Zernike from the New York Times, Juliet in Yorktown Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, Juliet.
Hi, Brian. I'm sure you've heard about this boy at the time that supposedly was with Kavanaugh during the incident. I had heard peripherally that he refused to testify, and I'm wondering how he's gotten away with that. I'm sure he doesn't want to be dragged into this whole thing, but this is where it is, and he has been named, and I'm wondering how he's getting away with not sitting in front of a committee and giving his version of it. And I suspect that he's refusing to do it, if that's the case, because he doesn't want to lie under oath. And I'm wondering how he's getting away with this.
It's a really good question. And for a little background on who you're talking about, for our listeners who may not know, I mean, for all the focus on whether Dr. Blasey will testify, what about the alleged other boy in the room, Mark Judge? He wrote a book about his drunken days at Georgetown Prep, referred to a Bart O'Kavanaugh, apparently a thinly veiled Brett Kavanaugh, said this week that he couldn't recall such an incident, which is not quite a denial, then changed his story to a denial. I think he might have even changed back to he couldn't recall Someone's got to investigate him, and then he should have to testify. No, Kate?
No, I think that's true. Well, okay. Whether he should have to testify, I mean, you know, people I talked to yesterday were like, he should be subpoenaed. And I don't know what the power, yes, certainly the panel could call him. But again, going back to your question, earlier question of what an investigation could do, you know, someone who understands sexual assault investigations could presumably talk to Mark Judge and find out what he knows. Your caller is right that he has said initially, sort of changed his story a bit, maybe you said it, he said he didn't recall, then he said it didn't happen, and I think now he's gone back to didn't recall, but he is saying that he's not going to testify. It does raise a suspicion that he doesn't want to lie under oath, but again, it's, you know, she's willing to come forward and testify and tell her story under oath, and yet she's still, people still cast doubt upon her. There's less doubt cast upon him. And I think that's indicative of where we're still not that far ahead of where we were during Anita Hill.
Peter in Walden, New York. You're on WNYC. Hello, Peter. Peter, are you there? Hi.
Yeah, I'm there. I'm just new to this process. So my big issue is to sort of take the aggressive approach where Dr. Blasey's attorneys are making the case very succinctly as to why they need the extra time, why the FBI needs to get involved. Point one, two, three, four. Because right now there's a lot of ambiguity in, well, why do they need the extra time? I don't get it. The Republicans lent, you know, they offered the week. Well, it takes time to figure out the culture in the school at that time. Clearly, there was, you know, there was a drinking mentality there. Was Judge Kavanaugh involved in that? Was Dr. Blasey, was she involved at that time? They talk about how she sort of became a lot more quiet after the incident. I mean, I understand 36 years and remembering the specifics of a party.
Right.
Well, that's not going to happen. But there's a culture, and then moving forward, there's her career as a professional, and, you know, what do those people who work with her, what's her credibility
well,
there?
And Peter, I I'm going to move on just for time, but I get all those points that you're making. And yet, Kate, I don't think it's that complicated to make a case why there should be an investigation before testimony. Here's an allegation that's new in the system, at least that, you know, I know Senator Feinstein was sitting on it for a while, but it would be new to the FBI, presumably. And we don't want to wind up, or I think most people don't want to wind up in a situation where it's just she says her version of the story in a hearing and he says his version of a denial in the hearing, when it's possible without too much difficulty to have a federal bureau whose job is to investigate things, I forget what they're called, to just look into the facts of the situation so that there's as much of a factual basis from a neutral body, as Anita Hill says, with expertise in sexual misconduct, to put as many facts as they can learn about the specific incident, about the specific party, about the culture, as the caller says, for as much context before they get into a public square and say, yes, he did, no, I didn't, right? I mean, it seems just like logical.
Right, it does. And if you look at Clarence Thomas's opening statement when he, at the beginning of, when he was asked before committee about these, when it becomes sort of the Anita Hill hearings, right, because she was, you know, she's not on trial, but in some ways she was, he says that he was the first, you know, the first I heard of these allegations was, I think it was 5 days ago when the, or, you know, 5 days before I heard of this publicly. Clarence Thomas, if you look at his opening statement, he had been asked about the FBI, asked about this by the FBI before Anita Hill came forward. So, yes, it makes total sense that you would have someone. You're not going to call a hearing, find things that you'd think, well, we really should follow up on that. Let's get back to you, because the political pressure is so great at this point. So it does seem like, in some ways, it's almost a time saver to have the FBI do it. And but again, time is huge here, and this goes back to my earlier point that this is all against the backdrop of the midterms. And what the Republicans, what Lindsey Graham said yesterday, Republican of South Carolina, said yesterday is, you know, he said, well, the only reason Dianne Feinstein is saying let's have an FBI investigation is because the midterms are soon, and the effect of an FBI investigation would be to put this off until after the midterms. Well, there's a little bit of pot kettle black there, right? Because of course the Republicans put off hearing the nomination of Merrick Garland indefinitely. What was it, 293 days?
Yeah, 293.
200. Yeah.
Pretty sure.
So, it's, you know, Republicans know something about time delays, but it doesn't seem to me that an FBI investigation would take that long. And at the very least, you could call Mark Judge. Let me just make one more point about the FBI,
please.
Which is that, you know, when George H.W. Bush asked the FBI to investigate, and they actually produced a written report. Now, they said the allegations were unfounded, but at least there was a report. At least, you know, senators knew what to ask, what questions to ask, because they had some paper on it.
Politically, as you say, Democrats would love to see Kavanaugh get knocked out so the next nominee couldn't get confirmed until after the November election, when the Democrats might win control of the Senate. Republicans obviously have reason to avoid that, so there's that political tug on both sides. But it seems to me that it's moot, and maybe this is what you were getting at just now, with respect to the question of an investigation before a hearing, because Dr. Blasey's request would not make a difference to that midterms question, I don't think. It would be maybe a one-week delay. So Monday, October 1st, say, rather than Monday, September 24th, would be the hearing. Still plenty of time for the confirmation vote before Election Day. So I'm still puzzled as to, considering that, why such fierce resistance to an inquiry before a hearing.
Well, I think the Republican strategy here is to, I don't know, maybe threaten is too strong a term, but is to make it clear that they intend to play hardball back, and that they are, you know, you know, to make it harder to raise the stakes. I mean, even setting a deadline of tomorrow for 10 a.m., you know, it's like it's sort of high noon, right?
Yeah.
So I think, like, there is, you know, they want to make it clear that they, you know, it's a sort of subtle way of saying we don't believe you. It's a challenging way. It's not looking at getting to the truth of all this.
And with Kate Zernike covering the Kavanaugh story for The New York Times, John in Monroe, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Hi, Brian. You know, I've lived through the Anita Hill hearings, and I was appalled by it. And to me, thinking about it logically, and I know logic is in a very short supply right now, why would anyone, assuming that, and as far as I know, the professor is an educated woman, she's not mentally ill or deranged, why would anybody go through what she's going through? To lie. What would be her motive? I don't get it.
John, it's a great question. And have any Republicans suggested what a motive would be? I mean, we played that Howell Heflin and Anita Hill clip from 1991, Kate, where he's ticking them off. Are you a woman scorned? Are you a civil rights zealot? He asked. What would Dr. Blasey's motive for lying be, according to Republicans who are, or even people who aren't Republican politicians, maybe conservative media, outside people, whoever, who are suggesting that she might be lying?
I think what I hear from people is generally your same question: why would she be lying about this? So I think people are inclined to believe her. And I think that's another thing about the delay, by the way, is they're afraid that the FBI investigation might support her allegations, and therefore it continues and sort of continues the questions about Kavanaugh. His support as this process goes forward, his support in polls is dropping. He's right now the lowest, the nominee with the least support of any.
Of any in like 30 years since Bork.
Yeah, pretty,
and
right.
That was before this came up.
Right, exactly. So the question of why she would do this, I mean, it's an excellent question. I think, you know, there is some experience. You know, I was saying this to someone yesterday, and the response was, well, but, you know, the Duke case, right? So remember the Duke lacrosse players who were falsely accused.
UVA, so, Rolling Stone magazine case.
Exactly. So there are cases where a woman has come forward. I think it's pretty, you know, I don't know this woman. What troubles me is when I hear people say, well, she must be crazy or, quote unquote, mixed up. I mean, there is this sort of, you know, it's not a scorned woman, but there's still this notion that women are crazy and can't be trusted. But I think there, you know, so and I think this idea of mistaken identity does play with people, although, you know, the fact that she can place Mark Judge in the room is pretty, you know, she's got a fairly good memory of this and who did what. So I do think it's questionable why she would put herself before a Senate hearing and all this. It's not an anonymous allegation in a magazine.
Right. And they say that she's been getting death threats. Members of her family have had to move. Did you hear that part?
Yes. In fact, she is not living in her house. And, you know, I think that absolutely makes sense. It rings true to me.
And certainly people's, men's and women's, memories can differ about things that can happen years later or even interpretations at the time. But this whole dispute seems to lend credibility to Dr. Blasey and cast doubt on these men who are denying the story. Why else would she want to be investigated by the FBI? I mean, President Trump is ready to fire half the Justice Department, so he's not investigated by the FBI.
Right.
Why would Dr. Blasey bring that upon herself as her key demand if she's not telling the truth?
Well, I think that's an excellent point. Someone who is not telling the truth does not want more investigation. She wants less. She wants to drop this in the middle of the night and flee back under a rock. You know, one thing I've been thinking about is, as you mentioned, President Trump and the FBI. I do wonder he's out there, has been out there for so long saying he doesn't believe in the FBI. I mean, it would be strange for him to now ask the FBI to investigate, but he's the one who has to do it.
There is that overtone. Mary on the Upper West Side, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mary.
Hi, good morning. I love the Brian Lehrer Show. It's a very quick, simple question. Understanding that Dr. Blasey has had to undergo a polygraph test, is there any reason why Judge Kavanaugh cannot take a polygraph test?
Well, she voluntarily underwent a polygraph test. How is that whole thing playing? People are skeptical of polygraph tests. People even think that taking a polygraph test a month before your story actually surfaces publicly might even be some kind of a stunt. So what's the context of the polygraph test as you see it today?
So I think, I mean, I heard one of your guests the other day talking about polygraph tests, and they're totally, they're totally without merit in a court. I don't think that's entirely true. I think there are questions about polygraph tests. I don't think they're completely without merit. I do think, you know, the way I read the polygraph test in this case is she was preparing herself to go public. She was trying to show that she had a solid case. If you read the profile of her that we have in today's Times on the front page, someone mentions that one of her friends from college mentions that she got a text and said, "Did I ever tell you about this?" So to me, it says she's looking around to think, like, who else would I have told this to? Who else? How else can I back up my story? She's got the therapist notes. She's gathering all of her evidence because she doesn't want to just come forward and have someone say, well, that's just your memory of something that happened 35 years ago. One interesting thing that, two points actually I would make. One is, if you believe Dr. Blasey, but you think that this shouldn't be held against Judge Kavanaugh because it was so long ago and he was only 17 years old, you also presumably believe that Judge Kavanaugh is lying now. So that's another wrinkle in this, right? So are you willing to confirm a Supreme Court justice as a Supreme Court justice if he is now lying before the Senate? The second question, I guess, I've forgotten my second point. But,
well, that's okay. But your first point goes right to the caller's question, which is, why isn't he being asked to take a polygraph test?
I think, you know, I think there is suspicion about them, and so it just seems like, yeah, it can seem like kind of a stunt.
If Kavanaugh,
I'm trying to put it in context. I think she was doing it for a particular reason. I don't think she did this. She didn't go public and then say, "And I'm going to take a polygraph test." It was one of a number of steps that she was doing. I mean, I think people have said Mark Judge should take a polygraph test.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any way that the panel can require him to take a polygraph test.
And we have this weird contrast with Vice President Pence just last week, having offered to take a polygraph test to prove that he didn't write the anonymous op-ed in the New York Times, that described a president under adult daycare in the White House. So we have one administration official offering to take a polygraph test, and now when it comes to Kavanaugh, what do you mean a polygraph test?
Right.
If Kavanaugh does testify again, this changes the subject a little bit from did he do it, is he lying? I would think Democrats would ask him some version of a question like this. In fact, maybe they should all ask him this question. If a 17-year-old boy succeeds in raping a 15-year-old girl, would you vote to take away her constitutional right to an abortion? And he won't answer, but that scenario is one of the things the Kavanaugh nomination is really about, right? And now it's much more salient. They have this situation. If a 17-year-old boy rapes a 15-year-old girl, would you vote to take away her constitutional right to an abortion? Would you expect that kind of questioning, or would it be all about this alleged incident?
No, I think that's absolutely one of the questions. And I think it goes beyond abortion to a woman's autonomy over her own body. So that's not just abortion. That, you know, it goes to many issues. And I think that's where this allegation is relevant. The point I was going to make earlier that had slipped my mind,
sure,
was, you know, some people have said to me, well, what if Judge Kavanaugh had come forward and said, you know what, this did happen, and I remember something happening. I was so drunk, or I was so 17, or, you know, I felt terrible about this for years. Some people have said to me, he could have, you know, the public would have forgiven him and thought, like, okay, he should come forward. So in some ways, I don't know. There's so many what ifs in here. It's hard to untangle all of them. But you know, one thing this adds to is a sense, you know, there's been a lot of talk about his alcohol use, right? So he's before the Federalist Society saying what happens at Georgetown Prep stays at Georgetown Prep. You know, he was in this society at Yale where known for its drinking. So, you know, I think there's a lot. This is adding up with other things that have been out there. I think that's why it's troubling to a lot of people.
Susan in Harlem, you're on WNYC with Kate Zernike from the New York Times. Hi, Susan. Susan, you there?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, now we got you. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks. All I want to say is I would like to hear a reporter ask Chuck Grassley whether he thinks there are Americans who feel that this rushed process is, especially if they don't investigate these charges, is illegitimate, which basically adds up to the Supreme Court being illegitimate if this guy is seated. I don't understand how the Republicans can keep pushing this forward if they think that, gee, we're delegitimizing a third branch of government.
So I think there are a couple of fears here. One is they fear that Dr. Blasey's story is true, and that's going to derail their nominee. And again, going back to our early part of the conversation, I think they are very worried about the midterms. So, you know, it's a very slim chance that Democrats take the Senate, but it's a chance. And so I think they're very worried about that. They know, again, as I said in the beginning, that the midterms hang over all of this.
But before you go, a couple of things. One is, A reporter said on the show the other day that she doesn't think the question of, oh, he was so 17, will come into it. That if it turns out that, you know, the weight of evidence or testimony or whatever winds up with the public believing Dr. Blasey, that's it for Kavanaugh. There's no, he was 17, progressives like to not ruin people's lives for one act of violence when they were a teenager, you know, because this is a Supreme Court nomination. You get the privilege of deciding what women can do with their body and so much else for life. So that he was so 17 if he did it, question is really never going to make it to the Senate. Is that, do you think so?
So I heard that interview, and that was one place where I found myself shaking my head, because I think what what the reporter said was that she didn't hear that from a lot of people. So that was striking to me because she's, you know, she covers the Hill. I hear that's the first thing you hear from people on the street is, oh, but you know, it was so long ago, he was 17. How many of us have raised teenagers? You know how crazy teenagers can be. And as you point out, there's this race and class point of we doom young black males' lives all the time. I think the difference here, if it doesn't come to the Senate, I'm not sure the question will come to Judge Kavanaugh himself. It may sort of factor into what senators are thinking. But I think it's because of what I said earlier. Because if you believe Dr. Blasey, then you have to also believe that Judge Kavanaugh is lying. And a Supreme Court justice who did something at 17 is one problem. But the bigger problem is a Supreme Court justice who is 53, 54 years old and lying before, you know, lying under oath.
I want to just, this was a half hour ago that we played the clip of Anita Hill with Senator Howell Heflin of Alabama from 1991. But we did have somebody call in to say, well, that was actually tongue-in-cheek questioning. He was a Democrat being supportive of Hill. And when he was asking, are you a civil rights militant, things like that, he was actually being supportive. He was being sarcastic. He wasn't actually challenging her. So for the record, I'm putting out that correction, if that's accurate. Do you happen to know?
I don't know, but I don't know. When you hear her voice, she doesn't sound like she thinks it's all in good fun. Contrast that to the clip you played the other day of Kavanaugh's exchange with John Kennedy. Do you remember this with Senator Kennedy?
Yes.
Where they're joking about, oh, you know, were you, did you like to have fun in high school? And there's a lot of sort of ha ha ha. You know, it's
right. The other day, Senator Kennedy of Oklahoma with Kavanaugh in the original hearing, saying, "Were you more of a John Boy Walton or
right.
more of a Ferris Bueller kind of guy in high school?" And they were just going yuck, yuck, yuck about that.
They were going yuck, 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 and something. And then Kennedy kind of, you know, sort of makes an effort to press it, and he, you know, he was asked about his friends or sport. He says Judge Kavanaugh had said about friends and sports, and so when he presses the question of, you know, where did you get into trouble, he said, "Well, I think the friends covers that," which to me was sort of, you know, I kind of cringed at that because you wonder, well, what do those friends know? And again, an investigation might tell us.
So last thing, what's going to happen in the next 23 and a half hours before this 10 a.m. Friday deadline for Dr. Blasey to agree to testify in some way? And they're saying it can be, you know, in private, doesn't have to be in a public hearing. They'll go to her in California, whatever. But it does seem from the clips I've been seeing while I was atoning for last year's sins yesterday and getting ready to commit all kinds of new ones. It seemed from the clips I saw that the Republican swing vote senators like Jeff Flake, Bob Corker, and Susan Collins are on Grassley's side squarely about this ultimatum. So are there no Republicans siding with the request for a few days of delay to have an independent investigation of the facts first? Is everybody going to stick to their corners on this? What do you actually see happening in the next 23 and a half hours?
So I don't know, but my sense is that Dr. Blasey is losing a little bit of support. There's a certain impatience with her. But again, Judge Kavanaugh is also losing public support. I do think that there will be some effort to have someone go out and speak with her. I mean, I have to believe that today is a day of frantic negotiations. You know what? I think the thing to watch here, the White House 2 days ago was sounding a little bit like, well, you know, we really need to hear from her, and sounding like they might cut Kavanaugh loose. I think the White House is now sounding more confident. I think I would say now 60% that they're going to have a vote next week and he's going to get through. And it's going to be one more thing in the Trump administration where people, or the Trump era, where voters are left feeling, as one of your callers said, that there's something illegitimate about all this.
Kate Zernike, New York Times correspondent, her article this week on Kavanaugh, A Changed America, debates an explosive charge. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So much more to come.